The Tom Woods Show, episode 1339.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy The Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Anthony Samaroff is back with us again. Anthony is co-host of the Scottish Liberty podcast, and he is the author of Universal Basic Income, For and Against. We talked to him about that on episode 1243. He's been on a couple of times. We talked to him on, four other occasions. And today we're going to be talking about an article he just wrote about what the market economy is really all about. Because most people, even its own defenders, say that its characteristic feature is competition. It's a competitive economy, and that's what makes it a free market economy. And Anthony says this is not the right way to think about it, and there are problems that come from thinking about it that way, and you basically create needless antagonism toward it by explaining it that way. And what's more, that's not the fundamental feature of a market economy. So we're going to talk about precisely what that is with Anthony Samaroff. Anthony, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me on again, Tom. Delighted to be here.
The easy thing to do would be to jump right into this article, but I've got something of great importance to share with the listening audience, and that is that you are going to be engaged in a debate as part of the Soho Forum that we all love, that is, of course, directed by Jean Epstein, co-directed by our other friend Naomi Brockwell, and you're going to be debating. Well, first of all, tell me the resolution.
It's about robots taking our jobs. The guy who I'm debating is Andrew Yang. He wrote a book called The War on Normal People, and he will be defending the idea that robots or automation and AI are going to be making us all poor, whereas I'm going to suggest that they're going to be making us all rich.
Well, this is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be in September of this year, 2019. You can already get tickets at thesohoforum.org. And I can't at this stage guarantee that I'll be there, but I am going to do everything possible to get there. Let's just say, because you know, things come up with when you have five kids, you just can't know for sure. But I am, let's just say, failing that, I am going to make every conceivable effort to be there for this because it's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be a really, really awesome night. And I would suggest that people buy their tickets now from the Soho Forum. For one thing, I'll make Jean Epstein really, really happy. And I know that we all want to make Jean happy. But for another thing, I'll give them an idea of numbers. And it would be great to see as many of you as possible. Like, I'm not always in New York. So the fact that I'm going to the States and I could meet some of your other listeners would just be so, so awesome. I'd love to have a chin wag with everyone.
It would really be great to get a good turnout for this. And, you know, Anthony does live in Scotland, so it is a big deal to have him in New York City. So this will be a great time. And remember the ongoing deal. When you get there, go up to Gene and simply say Tom Woods and you get a free drink at the bar. You know, you can't beat that. All right.
I wonder if I'm eligible for that offer.
I don't see why not. I don't see why you wouldn't be.
Great.
In fact, I think even your debate opponent, if he knew who I was, could get a free drink, but that's what he gets for not listening to the Tom Woods Show. There have to be consequences.
That's true. That's true.
All right. Let's jump into your article here. I'm going to link to it, of course, at tomwoods.com/1339. Capitalism is not a system of competition. I'd like you to start. I know you have a lot of arguments in here, but maybe you could distill the general thrust of what you're saying in just a couple of minutes, and then we'll start unpacking it.
Well, opponents of capitalism like to say that capitalism is a system of competition. What I want to say is that competition arises out of scarcity. Even in a completely communistic society where there was no market interactions at all, there would still be competition over scarce resources. It would just be over sucking up and brown nosing to whatever public officials get to allocate those resources, whoever holds the keys. So in scarcity, every system is to a degree a system that includes competition. And I want to say that competition isn't the defining, is by far, far from the defining feature of capitalism. Most of capitalism is all about cooperation. You voluntarily cooperate with people who are buying and selling things, with your employees, with your employer, with the people who make supplies for you, and all the way down the line. The primary feature of capitalism is choice, actually. You get to choose with your scarce resources what you want to choose. And I go on to say that some competition will arise out of that, but essentially that would occur under any system. And it's basically just a slight to call capitalism a system of competition. And I want to talk a little bit more about why they do that, or why I think they do that, in our interview.
Well, I personally think I can very well understand the sense in which you can think of capitalism as involving competition. I can get the meaning, but I think the use of that and the emphasis on that as if it's the defining characteristic is meant to conjure in our minds, well, the opposite of the kinds of things that we're taught to admire, and namely cooperation. We're taught that really humanity is at its best when it's engaged in cooperation. Competition of its nature sounds selfish and self-regarding. And then secondly, I think competition makes it sound as if if we have a competition, if it's Kane, the wrestler, Glenn Jacobs, versus me in an arm wrestling competition, we know the stronger is going to win. So there's this implication in the background that it means that the weak will be left to the side and the strong will get ever stronger. To me, those are the rhetorical benefits to the other side of using that word.
I should have sent you it for proofreading, because that's a really excellent point that I wish I'd included. So that's exactly it, because a lot of people's instinct is to jump to a spirited defense and go, no, wait, competition is good, because through competition, we get the best product at the best price. And that is, true. That's true so far as it goes. My article is in no way to say that there aren't benefits that arise out of having a multiplicity of service providers competing to serve us. It's just that I think the left, and it's easier to understand when you come from the left, they're playing a game. And the game is called, let's find ways that capitalism is sociologically damaging and is responsible for all the maladies we see in society. Everyone's poor mental health. The reason why anyone is sad is because of capitalism. And I say they're playing a game, but I believe that many of them actually earnestly believe this, that the reason why a lot of people aren't thrilled every day of their lives is because they have boring, meaningless jobs that turn them into automatons, and that the system itself shapes the soul of man. So they're constantly finding these justifications. Capitalism creates an atomized society. Unequal societies are less happy than equal societies. It makes us greedy. It makes us compete with each other. And it makes us materialistic, and all we care about is the next thing and the next thing. And the left are really, really good at playing this game. And so far as I've seen, most of capitalism's defenders aren't very good at this game. They're not constantly coming up with reasons why the government is sociologically damaging, or why, say, living under the government in Venezuela is not just damaging to your pocket, it's not just an economic thing, but to your very soul is damaging. So this is where we get a lot of the time from conservatives. No, greed is good and things like that. What they don't realize is they're walking straight into a bear trap that's been set for them when they actually accept left-wing premises. I mean, imagine Dinesh D'Souza's debating a leftist and says to him, Hitler was a socialist. And rather than go, well, he wasn't really a socialist as we understand socialists, the leftist said, yeah, but some of his welfare policies and his labor laws were actually very good. From my perspective, I like Hitler's labor laws. No, he would instantly see that what Dinesh D'Souza was trying to do is to poison the well, to associate Hitler with whatever it is that leftist believes. So I think that we should be wary of these sociological arguments, and maybe actually more work is necessary in this area. And that's why I tried to write this article as a contribution.
I know that in your piece, you're trying to say that instead of thinking of competition as being the defining characteristic of capitalism, we ought to think of it as being, well, something else. And we'll get into that a little bit more. I was thinking when I first saw the title of the article that you were going to say that it's not a system of competition, it's a system of cooperation. I thought you were going to make some kind of effort to claim that it's the opposite of what people say it is. Instead, you were making the claim, and there's nothing wrong with this, that the characteristic feature of capitalism is simply choice and voluntary interaction. That's what it is.
Yes.
But could we also make a case that there is a sense in which it is a cooperative enterprise?
Yeah, and that harkens back to that great article we all know, iPencil, where he talks about how all over the world people are cooperating to make a pencil. Not one person knows how to make a pencil from start to finish themselves. The graphite comes from one place, the wood comes from another place, the paint coating comes from another place. There's so many levels in which we do cooperate, and to use your turn of phrase, no one is using a bullhorn to shout anyone else into doing that. So I think that there's, to a large degree, capitalism is a system of cooperation. But at the end point, there is a competition, because whose pencil are you going to buy? The good thing is that it's competition over who serves the customer the best at the end of the day, which is a much better situation than competition over who gets to pull the levers of government. A figure that I'm fond of quoting on my podcast is an organization called the Sunlight Foundation said that for every dollar spent by American corporations on lobbying between a certain period, they got $741 in government kickbacks. So you're never going to get that bang for your buck serving the public. At that point, the government becomes the business's client. I'm going to shovel as much money as I want into government, into lobbying, to get special privileges from government. Now, that is the really scary type of competition. And I think it was really well illustrated in the competition for the favor of those who are in power and government, those who are in the authoritarian hierarchy of government, was really, really well illustrated in Ayn Rand's first novel, We the Living. I really love that novel because it shows that this competition continues, but it's just people are sucking up to the party. They're sucking up to the party. They're attending these meetings and spending their time in completely useless ways that don't actually serve anyone else, just to get the attention of the people who are above them so that they can get expedited up the ladder and get access to resources, a better house. And it is an example of a book that illustrates very well the sociological detriment of communism as a system on the soul of man, because it tries to demonstrate that some people's characters are completely corrupted by living under this system. People who might otherwise be perfectly cooperative under the incentives of capitalism, they might have been productive, they might have cooperated, they might have contributed to the well-being of others, but placed in that communist system, the weakness of their character led them to betray others or to try and get out of the discomfort of being at the bottom of the pile by sucking up for favors from authorities. Probably went on a few wild tangents there, but I'm just throwing everything out for you, Tom.
Oh, no, absolutely. Well, another thing I want to point out along this line is another theme I liked in the piece regarding competition is the argument that competition is evident in any system. And I think that's what you're driving at when you're saying that even if the state is providing everything, well, you have to, compete to hope that maybe the state gives you a particular favor over somebody else. There's still competition there. And it reminds me of something I've seen Milton Friedman say. I think it was when he was interviewed by Phil Donahue. And Donahue was saying, don't you have some kind of revulsion at a system based on greed? And Friedman gets that I'm going to crush you like a bug smile on his face, and he says, wait a minute. First of all, you think these other systems aren't based on greed? And then he goes through and talks about what life is like under communism. And of course, you're right that we shouldn't turn around and say greed is good, which is just such a dumb way of thinking. Mm. But the point is that greed is ubiquitous. And therefore, exactly. You might as well have a system that channels it productively. And incidentally, I'm not exactly sure that this is right on target, but I don't think I've ever been able to say this on the show before. But my favorite, because you mentioned We the Living, my favorite line, as many brilliant lines as Ayn Rand has, my favorite is in We the Living, where the one character says to the other, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, as so many of our enemies do, that you would – this is a communist speaking. I know you're going to say that you admire our ideals but loathe our methods. And she replies, I loathe your ideals. So great. So great.
I love that moment as well. It's one of the truly great moments in the book. And Tom, the other Tom Laird, my co-host on Scottish Liberty Podcast, has brought that up as one of his favorite moments in Rand as well. It is so good because so few people were saying that way in that period. And she's sometimes just so great at searing to the really heart of the issue. She has such a penetrating mind. I love that Milton Friedman moment as well. I've watched that quite a few times. And he is great at smacking people down by pointing out their blind spots. I think you said it really well, perhaps better than I could have said it, with the competition being ubiquitous. Because if you're a filmmaker in a communist or socialist society, you're still going to want as many people to watch your film as possible. Now, people have a limited amount of time, so you're going to have to compete for their time and eyeballs. Not everyone can be a filmmaker. Some people are going to be a street sweeper. So what's that mean? That means you're going to have to compete for whoever gets to decide who's a street sweeper and who's a filmmaker. You're going to have to compete for that position, even in a communist society. So as you said, competition really is ubiquitous. And this is just a slander game. They want to associate capitalism and free markets with every rugged, nasty, trollish, ghoulish motive that you can find in the heart of a man, and say that capitalism is the system of all of these ghoulish qualities, such as competition, and communism, socialism, is the embodiment of all these higher, more spiritual qualities, cooperation. But when we look at the real world rather than lofty theories, lofty ideals of what the world could be like, we find that these are just systems that channel the already existing traits of man, be they good or bad, in different directions. And we've not been very good at winning people over to the idea that, as you said, capitalism channels man's productive energy in a positive direction. I think we've lost that debate in the public mind, and it's probably until we start winning that debate that we're going to continue losing, because somehow the idea of a system that is ethical and spiritual, I don't mean that in the religious sense, but spiritual in the sense that it tends to man's nature in a way that's uplifting. That's what people are hungry for, and they don't see it. They don't see right now, they attribute every soulless feature of their life or the lives of anyone as to something that's created by capitalism. You know, they used to say that capitalism created poverty, and we'd come back and say that capitalism inherited poverty. It didn't create it. We might have made some ground on that argument, but I think there's lots of arguments that we've not made ground on.
How about people who say, I don't know if anyone said this to you, but let's imagine somebody reads your piece and says, you know, maybe you're right that competition is not the primary feature of capitalism, but to say that it's choice is just such a Pollyanna approach to the reality. Mm. The reality is the primary feature of capitalism is profit.
Okay.
And that profit comes at the expense of anything and anybody else, including the natural environment and the well-being of workers.
Wow. So you need to actually parse that one out quite a bit. How does someone make a profit in a capitalist system, in a free market? Maybe under this crony capitalist system, a lot of people make profit by abusing the government. But on a free market, the way that you make a profit is by serving your fellow man. You could say that capitalism, free market capitalism, as we would aspire to, subjugates a man's greed to the service of others. You could say it's an enforced sort of altruism. If you want to make a profit, if you want to get ahead in the free market, you're obliged to provide value. So that would be the most fundamental argument that I would have for that. It's all about profit, you know? Well, actually, you've got the freedom to choose whether you want to create a non-profit if you think that would serve your ethics better under a capitalist system. So there's so many, even that just one objection, I could probably write a whole essay on that one as the next one. So I guess what I'm saying is that capitalism subordinates antisocial impulses to the service of others.
That's a nice way of thinking about it, summarizing it. All right. So now let's talk about a feature of your piece that I particularly liked, where you take institutions and ideas people like, even libertarians, like friendship, for example. You know, even we are in favor of friends. Yeah, we're in favor of friendship.
As rugged individualists as we can be at times,
right.
You know.
We may not have that many of them, but in principle, we think the idea behind it is fine. But,
yeah, please be our friend. Please.
But what's interesting is that in the piece you say, in effect, you're saying that if you're going to say that the market economy is a system of competition, you could equally well, by that line of argument, describe friendship as a system of competition. And have you really gotten to the heart of what friendship is if that's what you've done?
Right. Because, you know, if Tom Woods and Bob Murphy both invite me to dinner on the same evening, I'm going to have to make a tough decision on who's going to get my delightful company. So does that make friendship a system of competition? We can't see all our friends all the time. We have a limited amount of time to make friends or to see our friends. So that means the scarcity of our time means that sometimes we can't see some people and we have to see other people. But it'd be a pretty big stretch to say that friendship is a system of competition. Now, of course, you've always got the option C of saying, hey, why don't we all get together on the same night? And the same is true on the marketplace, so long as the government bloody well lets it be true. So if we are both running events on the same night, don't anyone schedule an event in New York on the same night as the Soho Forum in September, especially not a libertarian event. But if that did happen by mistake, the event organizers could get together and say, hey, yo, why don't we just change the date of one of the events, or why don't we order a bigger venue? Why don't we book a bigger venue and get everyone together in the same place? Of course, in certain sectors of the economy, the government would come in with antitrust laws to stop that kind of cooperation taking place. So I don't think that you can say friendship is any more a system of competition than the market is. And I don't think that it's fair to say that it's, or rather, we should note that sometimes the government names what could be very reasonably considered to be cooperation collusion and makes it illegal.
How about democracy, another institution we love?
Right, okay. Or at least we need to say we do publicly, because it is the one sacred cow that is ubiquitously accepted without any analysis whatsoever. But yeah, I mean, what do politicians do except for compete for votes, compete for a limited number of seats in the parliament or in the Congress or the Senate? So it's interesting how these people, who generally will be going on about how important, how much they love democracy, how much we don't have a real democracy, I mean, whatever the problem is, it's nothing that more democracy can't fix. On one hand, they're saying that the market is unjust, the market is a system of competition, but this real tooth and nail battle, the battle for the very machinations of government, the battle for a seat at the table, who gets to decide, who gets guns pointed at them, that's a pretty fierce competition. And yet democracy is loved by exactly the same people who decry markets.
So describe for me then, if Anthony Samaroff were giving a lecture in Economics 101 and it's the first day, and the students have just sat down. They don't want to be there, you know, but they have to be taught. And you're going to, after you go over the course requirements, you're then going to take a couple of minutes to tell them what it is they're going to be learning about. And you're not going to say to them, you're going to be learning about our wonderful system of competition. How would you describe it to people whose minds, let's be kind here, are blank slates when it comes to this stuff?
Okay, great. Well, I put together my own definition. I guess you're not really meant to put your own definition together of words, but I thought that it was a fair one. In its long form, I said capitalism, at least in its free market laissez-faire ideal, is a system of the voluntary exchange of goods and services in the absence of physical coercion, theft, compulsion, or fraud, predicated upon the fundamental right to own and accumulate property. That is a mouthful, to be fair. So for brevity, I think it's fair to say capitalism is a system of voluntary exchange predicated upon the right to own property. And I think that that is the defining feature of capitalism, that it's a system of voluntary exchange and that it's predicated upon the right to own property.
All right. So then that sounds not so bad, whereas most definitions of capitalism, I find, are boogeyman definitions.
Yeah, and the thing is, people can still argue with you over that. They can still come to you and say, well, is it really fair to say that it's a voluntary system of exchange, given that some people have more than others, and they therefore they've got more power? You don't have as much power as your employer. And that's fine, you know. They might say, is it really moral to accumulate so much property when other people are poor? And we can have those debates. But I'm reminded of Confucius saying, wisdom begins with calling things by their proper names. And I think if we can at least agree on a definition that isn't a boogeyman definition, isn't a biased one, we can then have more productive conversations with the discontents of capitalism, with the discontents of markets. But the thing is, these words, these boogeyman descriptions, as you say, are actually getting in the way of clear thinking. It's like when people just hear a policy and say, that's right wing. That's right wing. Oh, well, thank you. That really progresses the conversation there. You naming the policy right wing. No, that doesn't really do any good. If we can get our terms defined in reasonable ways, then we can explore our ideas more clearly.
Now, I know you're going to be discussing this at the Soho Forum, so I don't want you to reveal your entire hand or anything. But given that we are talking about capitalism, and one feature of it is a desire to, you know, you do want to produce goods at the lowest cost, because what that really means is that you're wasting the fewest resources, and that's a good thing.
That's right.
What stewardship is. That's correctly understood. So automation is part of that process. What would be your, let's say, 30 to 60 second way of getting us to think that maybe the world that's coming with more automation is something not that we don't need to fear as much as we've been told?
Well, the main fear is that a few guys are going to end up with all the machines and they're going to be trillionaires living in these gated communities while the rest of us starve. But that doesn't really understand the way that the market actually redistributes the benefits of automation, because they make everything cheaper to produce. Now, who are you going to sell that to if no one else has any money? It ends up being in a warehouse, and then you need to pay for the upkeep of the warehouse with all the stuff that you can't sell because everyone else is too poor. At some point, it becomes in your interest to just give it away. And I think what's eventually going to happen is that the robots that make stuff are going to be so cheap that everyone can afford them. I mean, our laptops, they cost a fair whack today, but they're not going to be worth very much 20 years from now. Similarly, there's all sorts of charity shops that are buying a garment in history used to be a once-in-a-lifetime affair. Now you go to a charity shop, they can't get rid of some of the clothes that people are handing out. This is partly to do with automation. The advancement of the productive services have made everything so abundant that they're trying to give it away. So I think that people should be relatively optimistic about that. I also think that at the point where automation, where we have our material needs met, then people start to think more about if people are still miserable, even though they're not working these laborious jobs and factories that don't involve their brain, then they're going to start to be looking for things that will take them out of that misery, whether that's more community, whether that's taking more care of their physical health. And we're also seeing a ton of apps come out to help people with that, to help people with their physical health, to help people meet with other people in the real world. And I think that the market is going to migrate more and more towards trying to find innovative ways of meeting our spiritual needs, so to speak. And that's because our material needs will all be met. You know, when your material needs aren't met and your spiritual needs aren't met, you can't tell the difference. You'll think the reason why you're miserable is because you don't have enough stuff. But when you've got all the stuff you need and you find that you're still not happy, that's when you start to think, well, maybe it's not just because I don't have stuff. Maybe I'm actually going to have to look a little bit deeper for answers to this problem. So that's my elevator pitch. I'd like to mention that in my ebook, which I've got the paperback copy, is in the process of being made. There's a section on automation where I deal with it really thoroughly. And it was after reading that Gene Epstein invited me to speak at the Soho Forum. He said that it was very well argued. So I would recommend that people pick up a copy of Universal Basic Income For and Against.
Absolutely. So tell me what the website is.
So you can get that from anthonysamroff.com/UBI. It's also available on Amazon Kindle if you want to throw me a few shekels. But and it helps. I'm not that fussed about the cash, but it does help it put it in front of other people if it gets more sales on Amazon.
All right. What I'll do is on the show notes page, I will link to both of those ways of getting the book, and people can decide for themselves or do eeny, meeny, miny, mo or whatever, and they'll have both options available to them. Before we conclude for today, though, I mean, that was a perfect segue into the promotion of that book. I mean, it impresses even me. But right. I do want to ask if, other than that, if you have something, if that topic hadn't come up, something that you would like to promote or a website or anything that you're doing, I'd like you to take that opportunity to do that now.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I know you're not meant to give too many links at the end of a media appearance, but I wanted to say loads of people who listen to your show really liked my book, Procrastination Annihilation. I think after I came on your show and promoted that, something like almost 800 people downloaded the book. So I've done another short self-help book. It's even shorter, and it's very relevant to libertarians, at least as we're stereotyped. It's a short 47-page manual called How to Make Small Talk. And it's got a ton of practical exercises that you can just basically use in everyday conversations to get more confident at speaking to people you don't know, or even people you do know. And you can sign up, you can get that for free at anthonysamroff.com/smalltalk. And if it gets anything like the response that Procrastination Annihilation got, I think your audience will really, really like it. It's really, really practical, no waffle. And if someone had given it to me when I was a younger man, it would have given me a huge shortcut to improving my confidence as a communicator.
I've heard tremendous things about it, actually. So,
all right.
Yeah. So
oh,
good.
Great.
Good. So support Anthony just in everything he does, because he's not going to let you down. He's not going to let you down. And especially now that he's got his hair situation under control, he can now be endorsed wholeheartedly with no mental reservation whatsoever. So, Anthony, thanks for your time today. And I hope we'll talk before then. I'll see you in the supporting listeners group. Anthony's a supporting listener. You can talk to this guy at supportinglisteners.com. It's amazing. But I will definitely, as I say, I will do everything possible to get there to the Soho Forum and cheer you on the night of that debate. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me on your show as ever.
All right. If you visit anthonysamaroff.com or beyourselfandloveit.com, you'll find that Anthony has what? He has a course that he offers, a personal development course. So he is further demonstrating my point that having a course is a great way to position yourself, to have a product. Also, it improves your credibility. I mean, hey, you teach something. And it doesn't have to be something crazy broad that would take you 500 years. It can be some super precise, specific skill that you can teach somebody or how to use some platform or whatever. So I put together, because I do a lot of online courses, a lot of my friends do this, It's a great way to, you know, generate a little dough, but also you're helping people and you're learning an awful lot about creating stuff, creating products and marketing them. And this is a great education you're giving yourself in addition to the people you're helping. So how do you get started doing that? I put together a bunch of over-the-shoulder, step-by-step videos showing you how to create your course and how to get it out there. So you can get that for nothing at tomwoods.com/makecourses. All one word, obviously. This is the internet, after all. tomwoods.com/makecourses. And you're going to be, you're going to say, wow, I cannot believe Woods just gave me all these resources. Well, that's the kind of guy I am. So check that out, and I will see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.